The weekend is near and the next round of footy is finally upon us. And your ultimate guide to all the upcoming action lies within the Fox Footy Podcast Bunker. Welcome to Match Committee.
It's hard to believe we've already reached round 16, but it's even harder to believe that one of our own would be in the news rather than reporting it. We'll address the elephant in the footy media room, as well as give you a comprehensive rundown of what the possible top eight will look like at the end of the home and away season. On this week's edition of the Fox Footy Podcast, Ben Waterworth with you, as is Twitter Moments featured wrestling contributor, Max Lawton. Hello, Maxi.
Yes, it turns out wrestling fans, not all great. Ben, weird. They like concussions and people getting them, so that's a fun time. Wrestling's a very fun topic for me, but let's not touch on it too much.
Yes, no, I did see you mentioned on the Twitter Moments after, because there's a rival to a WWE company that's threatening to take over as well, and you're not too happy about that. Oh, not too happy about what you saw.
Yeah, there's a wrestling war. It's like 2000 all over again. WCW's almost back, except they're not going to ruin their company and lose $60 million in a season. So it's fantastic.
You can keep across Maxi's wrestling antics if you follow him at Max Lawton. But also joining us is the predatory worm himself and the second most tweeted about Tom over the weekend, Tom Morris. Hello, Thomas.
Hello, Ben. Max, who's the first most tweeted about?
Tom Gleeson winning the Logie.
Oh, yeah, fair enough. He was funny, I thought.
Yes, he was, Hugh Morris.
He's very blunt.
Yes.
No, I did see a bit of the Logies in amongst all the other sports.
Well, he was got a campaign going for himself, threw out grenades to everyone, and then took a few people down during his speech.
Yeah, I must admit, every time I watch the Logies or events like that, I feel like too many of them try to be too funny too often. Mm. But occasionally, it comes off. And I really enjoyed the Hamish and Andy skit about the cutaway shot. That's one thing I did watch at the Logies.
Okay, so you actually watched the Logies then? You're talking about
I saw specific. About 25 minutes of it, and that's what I saw.
Yeah. Well, you are one of
not
the rare
that I could
ones,
ever though. Be... I mean, I'm not funny, but those you're most right. of them are quite funny to an extent, but some of them just don't hit the mark.
You're on television though now, Tom. You could win a Logie someday.
I'm not winning a Logie, mate.
Did
I'm
you?
Not, I'm not funny.
I remember in year 11... I was trying to get a girl to like me, so I promised her that I'd take her to the Logies if I ever got on TV. Didn't really work, but, you know, gave it a go.
You've got as much chance of winning a Logie as you do of winning a Brownlow.
Probably fair, to be honest, based on my TV skills so far.
Speaking of fair, we'll get to fair and fair or fast very soon. Not quite yet, and we'll also get to the elephant in the room very soon. But let's start, Tom, with the story that you were all over last week, the score review. So this time last week, we had a bit of an expose into an AFL insider providing some information on what the score review and the score reviewers were happening and how they were being treated. Then on Thursday, we get a very controversial finish to the Essendon-Giants game. Now, Essendon would have gone ahead despite that score review nonetheless, but still, considering he was in the dying moments and that it seemed for many a clear-cut touch that was done by Giants defender Adam Kennedy as McKernan was kicking the goal. And then there was some follow-up to that afterwards, which sort of had Dwayne Russell on 3AW thinking that you'd really sparked a fire with some of the claims you were making about the AFL.
Yeah, he thought I'd get sacked. No, well, first of all, I think what happened on Thursday night, I think it was touched.
Yeah.
But if you give us the right explanation, i.e., you need conclusive evidence, and it wasn't conclusive. I don't necessarily agree, but I'm not saying it's a howler. I can live with that.
Yes, degrees of these things.
Yeah, what I couldn't live with was Friday morning when Gil was on 3AW speaking mistruths about the whole system. Now, if you're the CEO of any company, any business that's worth billions of dollars, and you're in $2.5 million a year, you don't need to know every single little detail about the inner workings of the company, but you need to know the big issues. And the biggest issue on Friday morning was the score review after what had happened the night before. And he was asked whether AFL staffers are score reviewers, and he said no. Four of the six Victorian AFL staff, Victorian score reviewers are AFL staffers. In fact, the two from the night before are AFL staffers.
Now, didn't Steve Hocking do the radio rounds on Saturday and sort of... I believe he said that there were AFL staffers listed. So he was a bit more honest about it.
That's right. But then I wrote an article on Friday afternoon, effectively... rejecting what Gil McLaughlin had said because
he was wrong.
He was wrong.
Seems an issue.
He was wrong on that. He was wrong on the fact that it was their most experienced and best score reviewer.
Yep.
He might be the best score reviewer they had on Thursday night, but he's a first-year score reviewer in AFL footy ops. And the assistant score reviewer was the one who had stuffed up a few weeks before in the GWS North Melbourne game in Hobart. So there are score reviewers out there that have been doing it for 5 years and 7 years and they're former goal umpires and they haven't made mistakes at all this season. Yet the assistant score reviewer on Thursday night 3 days after the whole thing blew up on the couch was someone who'd made a mistake 2 weeks before. Don't you dare tell us that your two best people were working on Thursday night.
Have you had any contact from the AFL since you've made these accusations?
Well, they're not accusations. They're just facts. No, I haven't.
Right.
They're just, that's just the way it is. And that's fine. I mean, I want to make it clear. I think Gil's got a lot of good qualities. I think he's a really...
tall.
He's tall. He's tall. No, I think he's improved in the way he understands really delicate issues, and he had to improve. I think he's a very good negotiator behind the scenes, from what people say. But, geez, he's missed the mark on the score review, just like he missed the mark on the Dane Rampey climbing the post situation. If you're not across things, don't comment. It's embarrassing when you, as the CEO of the company, the most visible person, you get things wrong.
Is that why this matters? And for the score review issue, it matters that there are first-year people on because it shows how much effort the AFL's putting into the system, essentially?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, none of us can say the first-year person, who I know the name of, but I'm not saying because he's...
It's not a public figure.
Is not the best AFL person for that job. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying... Don't pretend like the second person on is the best person for the job, and don't pretend like they're not AFL staffers when they are AFL staffers.
Well, we can read all of Tom's work on the score review, which was a very comprehensive on foxfooty.com.au. Now, on Saturday night, some very interesting AFL results with Western Bulldogs upsetting Port Adelaide and North Melbourne's very comprehensive victory over Collingwood. And then as those two games were ending, Australia and New Zealand was about to start in the in the Cricket World Cup. And almost immediately as the final siren rang, a tweet was sent out by a former Melbourne player, now Fremantle forward Jesse Hogan, who was watching Channel 501 on Fox Cricket, and tweeted out the following. Tom Morris is commentating the World Cup. It's his first call-up, or I haven't been paying attention. Well, the latter is factually correct. Honest leech, Jesse says, had a job at Melbourne Football Club that was private and used it and leaked private conversations to get a leg up. Not even involving me, but genuine leech of a personality. Have never seen a faker figure in media. And just in case you didn't see it, Tom, he then tagged at Tom Morris 32 afterwards. Now, this is widely discussed, mainly on the Nine Network, actually. I don't know if Matthew Lloyd really stood up for you. But the first question is, are you okay?
I'm okay. Thank you for asking.
Very important question.
I've been fine since the tweet came out.
You are one of the thickest skinned individuals I've ever met in my life.
Well, thank you. But I've been called a lot worse than a leech before. And people on social media are called a lot worse than that as well, whether it's racist or sexist or extremely personal attacks.
And you've been big on this.
This was none of those.
You've been big on this all year about offence being in the eye of the beholder.
Yeah, and I wasn't offended by that in any way. And I was made aware of it. I was then made aware that it had been deleted, and that was it. Now, my Twitter has never blown up like it did after that happened.
Sure.
But I wasn't concerned by it one little bit. It was a tweet sent by an AFL player who I hardly know, and I've never had a run-in with him in my life, and I hope that he gets back to playing soon because I think Freo would love him back.
Okay, so you might not be offended, but are you disappointed in what was put out there?
No, I don't care. I don't. There's probably two parts to it. The initial, I mean, calling me a leech and a fake figure, that is his opinion, and he can say that. That's fine. It didn't concern me at all. The second bit, and I don't know why I have to put it on the record, but now I think I probably need to, about being sacked from Melbourne Footy Club, is not true.
Right. So explain what happened. Were you employed by the Melbourne Football Club?
I was employed by Fox Footy, and Melbourne Footy Club came to me and said they'd like to start a footy podcast, knowing that I'm a Melbourne supporter.
Yes.
So Clint Stanaway from Channel 9 and myself hosted the Melbourne podcast for the first few weeks of last year.
Quite a few clubs do this.
Quite a few clubs do it. Julian De Stoop did it at Essendon. Does Nathan Templeton do a Geelong one? Either way.
Definitely a few people on the Geelong.
There's journalists who work in the media that also help out with club podcasts. And I said before I accepted this role that I'm happy to do it, but my number one responsibility is Fox. So if there's a story that I need to break that is going to reflect poorly on Melbourne Footy Club, that's what I need to do because my employer is Fox. I did the podcast and then I got a story, not via any role I had at Melbourne Footy Club at the time, that Brendan McCartney was having some troubles in the coach's box with the other coaches. And I wrote that story and I sent Melbourne Footy Club, the media manager, a text saying, look, I get that this is a touchy subject. if you want me to step aside, I'm more than happy to because my number one role is Fox. And he replied a day or two later saying, I think that's probably a good idea. Absolutely fine. Amicable, no issue whatsoever. And that was it. And it probably taught me that when you're in my role as a trying to be a news breaker, which can be pretty brutal and not always writing really positive stories, you have to probably just prioritise Fox Sports more than anything else. And you can't work for a footy club.
Because someone tweeted the other, I think, as we put out the questions for the tweets or tweet out for answer questions, why isn't Tom's Melbourne work on LinkedIn?
Yeah, the reason for that, and I saw that one, the reason for that is because this was no different really to doing a host of sportsman's nights. It was a casual arrangement. This wasn't a part-time job or a full-time employment. This was a casual arrangement, no different to doing a few sportsman's nights at some footy clubs or cricket clubs around the place. So I don't think it was necessary that I put it on LinkedIn at the time.
Also, who updates their LinkedIn is more to the point.
Yeah, that's so the other thing.
That would be the other question I would have. This was a strange one to me. For a start, you were not commentating the World Cup, so that's a factual analysis.
I was hosting.
You were hosting
okay.
on the broadcast.
I let that one slide.
Why? What do you think made Jesse put this out on Twitter? Very public thing. A guy hadn't tweeted in about over a year, I believe.
Yeah, I don't know. You'd have to ask him. I've only met him once, and it was absolutely fine. In fact, he was on the Inside Melbourne podcast that Clint Stanaway and I were hosting, and it was absolutely fine. As I said, I've never been concerned about it. Probably the only thing that concerned me at all was that my mum was seeing all the abuse that I was copying, and you know, it's not for her to see that. I can cop it, but it can affect your family and things like that.
Yeah.
But it didn't make me lose any sleep. That's for sure. Because when someone has a go at you, and the first bit is just a statement of what do you call it?
Yeah.
Like a derogatory statement. The second bit is a factual inaccuracy. It's not going to.
As a personal attack.
Me.
If he just left the first tweet in there, I don't think it wouldn't have gone as viral as what it did. But the second tweet was very personal, which is, I think it's quite an unprecedented social media post because when journos, and it's not journos actually, it's more ex-players these days. With player takeover around, there was a really good discussion around the player-media relationship. Yeah. And it's actually ex-players that are stronger in their criticism now of current players rather than the written journos. Because the written journos, I think, are reporting news and straight news as more than
ever.
So the thing I took out of it as well is that there was a lot of two-way street, mate. A player has a crack back. But this was a personal attack. And the other thing is that comes up, and this is a tough issue, that Jesse's had a tough few years with injuries and personal circumstances, and he's missed footy as well. The club says to focus on his mental well-being, which I think the media in general has respected and reported that fairly. So is it fair that he can then send a very personal, scathing tweet out like that?
Fair to who?
Is it fair to you? Is it fair to reporters in that sense?
Who I think
overall have treated him with respect?
Well, he only sent the tweet to me. I mean, I'm not looking for anyone to come and defend me, and it was nice what Matthew Lloyd and Kane Corns and these guys said, but I didn't need anyone else to defend me. I didn't need to defend myself. That's why I didn't reply to the tweet initially, because I thought I don't need to defend myself here.
There's no winning from that.
There's no winning, and I understand the game. Footy players are, by and large, way more respected than journalists.
Yes.
And I completely get that, because they are the game. And journalists, not just me, but lots of footy reporters are seen as snitchy and conniving and manipulative, and they do stuff to find stories. But in the end, my loyalty is to my job and my bosses, and my family and my friends, and they know who I am, and I don't need to concern myself if a player's having a go at me, especially when it's not coming from a position of knowledge.
I feel a lot of this speaks to the relationship that journalists have with the readers now.
Yeah.
I feel like it's gotten worse and worse over the years. I remember when we were in uni, we all came up at the same time, you'd see surveys and journalists was one of the least trusted fields
already.
And I feel like that's gotten worse and worse, particularly in sport where people are so divisive. People are, I mean, politics is the same way, but people are so tribal about this, and they feel like if you're writing a story about the Adelaide Crows, Tom, yeah, you hate the Adelaide Crows.
That's right, yeah.
That's the way people react to you, and therefore you get a lot of negativity.
Well, it's an emotional game,
yeah,
isn't it? Yeah.
And I think people, there is a lot of misunderstandings about, A, the way journalists go about their jobs.
Yeah.
They're not, with very rare exceptions and notable exceptions, they're not stealing documents and leaking them out and yeah, things like yeah, that. Yeah. You know, they're building relationships and things like this. So it really speaks to the way that that works. And even players now see that in a similar way.
That's right. From a factual perspective, there was no stealing of documents or inside information while I was at Melbourne Footy Club that got me a leg up at Fox. There was none of that at all. There was two completely separate things. And I think I don't know why I have to put that on the record, but now I feel as if I do, because people are saying you were sacked from Melbourne Footy Club. That absolutely didn't happen. And the other bit, well, I'm sure I'm going to be called a lot worse than a leech in my time. And I'm sure I know a lot of people are called a lot worse than that. I've seen it myself. And I think you need to have thicker skin than that. And unless it's racist or sexist or extremely personal, it's not going to make me lose any sleep.
How did he go on the other side, Maxi?
I think he's done quite well there. Nice little interviewee.
I wasn't going to respond at all. I didn't want to give it any oxygen.
We're about giving the people what they want on this podcast.
Yeah, no, but I didn't want to give it.
But also, how many people have privately messaged you, checking in with you as well, and wanting to probably find out? So a combination of checking in that you're okay, and two, probably wanting to find out a little bit more information and background.
Yeah, it says a lot about people that you get messages saying, "Are you okay?" That probably wouldn't have happened 10 or 15 or 20 years ago. But I got a lot of messages saying, "Are you okay?" One from you, Max, and you as well, Ben. And rest assured, I'm absolutely fine, but there would be people out there who, and footballers especially, actually, footballers more than anyone, who cop abuse on social media that aren't okay. And I don't think that's acceptable at all, because they're just doing their job.
Well done, Thomas. Well answered on the Fox Footy podcast. But it's now time, before we get into Australia's favourite segment, Maxi, the run home went up on Sunday night as well. Are we starting to narrow down the amount of teams that are actually genuine contenders for the top eight now?
Weirdly, I think we've actually grown the number. So last week I thought it was probably down to about nine teams, because I was suddenly like, oh, Port and Fremantle, they're trustworthy enough. They're probably going to do okay. And then Fremantle goes and loses to a Carlton side without Cripps, Mackay and Harry Curnow, and Port goes and does Port things and loses to the Bulldogs a week after beating Geelong. So suddenly, from the numbers I've ran, I think the top seven, the teams that are 8-6 and above, probably make it. Richmond has some questions because of its percentage, but they have 7 of 8 games at the MCG from here, and then at Metricon this week. They probably beat the Suns.
They should.
And Brisbane and Adelaide, they've won enough games. They should be making it as well. So the question is then whether a team like Essendon, 7-7, or even a North Melbourne or a Sydney at 6-8 can get into the eight. And from what numbers I ran on Sunday night, I had a team with 11 wins getting in, which hasn't happened in ages. It's usually 12 minimum to get in. So it's a really tight race, and a lot of teams in that bucket play each other over the last run home. I'm interested in what you guys think. Who do you like out of those teams from Port and below on the ladder?
Yeah, Port, there's some good stuff on the couch last night about Port Adelaide, which you wrote up as well, Maxi, on the website, about just how inconsistent Port Adelaide has been and the different game styles that they've had over the past 4 or 5 years. And it's changed again under Ken Hinckley. It's a little bit more fast, a little bit more through the corridor, which means that it's harder to get their forward half territory game. So I don't trust Port Adelaide. North Melbourne are coming with a big wet sail here, Tom.
Yeah.
On Saturday night, they were outstanding. But also the Swans, surely they can't do what they did in 2017 when they went on that huge win, a streak of 15 wins from 16 games. But the numbers, the wins, and the percentage now, it has to be said, are banking up for those two sides.
Yeah, I don't think Sydney's going to play finals. North Melbourne are doing something special, but they've just given other teams a head start, which makes it really difficult.
I honestly think that Roos loss to the Swans down in Tassie a few weeks back might cost the Roos finals. Because right now they are a top eight quality team. And if you listen to some of the guys from Champion Data, they've been very strong on this. That really, and I think David King tweeted something to this accord last night, so he obviously looks at the numbers a lot. That if North had played like this all year, they'd be contending for the top four.
Yeah, that's right.
They're playing a really good, sustainable game style. The problem is, being 6-8, you can probably only lose two games, maybe three this year, and they've still got to play West Coast in Perth and Geelong in Geelong. So you've got to be flawless otherwise.
What we're seeing this year is that the comp is more even than ever.
Yeah.
You know, don't need to be a rocket scientist to work that out. But I think I saw a set on, was it Swamp Thing who tweeted something about
probably
the second place team?
Yes.
has won 4 games this year, and the 17th place team has won 7?
6 or 7. Six or seven. It's ridiculous.
So that just tells you that there is a... You can throw a blanket over the majority of the comp, which is what Gil McLachlan wants. It's what the AFL want. Mm. Now, we will argue that the quality's gone down and the scoring's gone down and it's not as good to watch, which may all be true, but it can also be true that is because there is a real equality about the talent on lists, and that if you're 5% off, you get beaten now more than potentially what you did a few years ago when talent got you further.
I think that's what it is, and my hope is that teams like Collingwood, GWS, West Coast that we know can play at a certain level, even Adelaide and maybe Brisbane, that they don't have those bad days in the finals, because Geelong has been sort of the one consistent team, and that's why they're at the top. Yeah. So if any other team can actually bring some consistency, they can probably challenge, which is why I think at the moment West Coast might be the favourite to finish second. I don't think West Coast is anywhere near the second best team in the comp.
No.
Their percentage shows that. It's a pretty average percentage, but they're 10-4 and they've got quite a few games at Optus still to come. So they'll probably get there, and with 2 home finals, you know, you'd think they'd make it, which would be very interesting indeed.
All right, now time on the Fox Footy podcast for Australia's favourite segment, and Lockie Hume is now becoming a weekly feature on the Fox Footy podcast because it's Fair or Farce.
Jeez, we've who's spending the money for us?
We're scraping the bottom of the barrel of the digital budget.
That's terrific. Well done. Okay, Ben, fair or farce? Andrew Gaff deserves to be booed against Freo on the weekend.
It's fair. It's fair game. So fair, maybe. It's fair game. So it's the first Fremantle home derby since last year's game, and I think he's going to be. I think he knows what to expect. I think the Eagles know what to expect.
So booing's play on.
Oh yeah, it's fair game. He punched a guy in the face, and that's gonna rival the tribal like supporter group of the Dockers, who, you know, would have felt for their first year player Andrew Brayshaw. I think it's play on.
And it's not about a racist or sexist or problematic reason. It's for punching someone in the face. I think if you're going to boo someone, that's as reason as a player is going to give you.
Okay. Max, fair or fast, the grand final should be locked into the MCG forever.
Forever farce.
Okay, for the next 40 years, I'll rephrase it.
So this is obviously based on Chris Scott's comments on AFL 360
last lots night. Of discussion, yeah.
So, which was weird for me because it just popped out of the blue and I was like, oh good, we're having this debate again. So I'm one of those people who likes having it at the MCG because I'm a Victorian and I'm biased. Also because I like the comparison that someone made to the FA Cup.
Yeah, who made that comparison?
I'm not sure. It was someone on Twitter, but it was... Was it you, Tom?
In the office, that's fine.
I didn't hear that, so...
That's okay, no worries. No, the FA Cup at Wembley.
It's always at Wembley. You know, you might not be a London team, but you get to go to Wembley. It doesn't quite have the same thing, but then again, the grand final has home ground advantage based on dimensions, not based on crowd support, so you don't have that concern. And it's also not like interstate teams have not been able to win the premiership.
That's right, yeah.
So in this era, it hasn't been that problematic. The concerns that you have if you're moving the grand final around, the idea of GWS hosting a grand final at Giant Stadium would be rather ridiculous. Obviously, you'd probably do it at the biggest ground in the state, and that's historically been the trend, that you host grand finals at the biggest ground available in the state. So I'm one of the people who's supportive of it being the MCG. I can completely understand why in a national competition you would want to try and balance things out, but we don't have a balanced fixture, so there are plenty of other ways you need to fix the comp first.
Yeah, the whole place is unbalanced. Ben... If Geelong, and along the same lines, if Geelong play Collingwood in week one of finals, the game should be at GMHBA, or fast. Man.
Chris Scott said they weren't petitioning the AFL, but the lobbying started, no doubt, in May. I think it's a farce.
I disagree with
you. Yeah, I know. I know you were going to disagree with me. I suppose I come from the traditional mindset as well, in like, how awesome would it be? It would be an awesome atmosphere to have high 30s, low 40s crowd at GMHBA Stadium. And I get the argument that Geelong deserve the home final, particularly because they're on top of the ladder. But if you're going to win the grand final, if you're going to win it all, you've got to be able to win it at any venue. And I know they've earned the right as well, but imagine the crowd. I always remember the Geelong Collingwood preliminary final of 2007. Yeah,
Buckley's last game.
Was one of the most awesome atmospheres of all time. And that's the thing that I think is going to reverberate around. If it's going to go worldwide, this game, that atmosphere is going to go right around the world. But that doesn't matter if you're looking at it purely wins and losses, nuts and bolts. Geelong finished on top of the ladder. They deserve to play at their home ground as what they've played with all season. So I think my heart sways towards the romanticism of playing the MCG. But I totally get the other side of it.
Which is interesting because as both Cats fans, you'd think our hearts would be with having it at GMHBA for the advantage. But I'm with the same token, and I certainly understand the business argument. You'd be locking out probably 40, 50,000 people by having it at GMHBA and not the MCG. So I think Collingwood and Richmond, if Geelong play them in the first week of finals, have it at the G. Every other team have to have it at GMHBA. I've become a lot stronger on that over the years, and I think Geelong definitely deserves it. Because at that point...
Essendon?
It's a numbers game. Well, they're not going to host Essendon.
No, but give me some clubs that Geelong would have to play at the MCG in week one of the finals.
I think the MCG tenants make a lot of sense.
So Melbourne?
Melbourne is has a lesser fan base.
Okay, so this is where we start.
So obviously, it's a hard line to draw, but the interstate clubs coming over, you're not locking out as many people. You can still give them some assigned seats. It's not as bad.
And how would the interstate clubs feel? So for instance, if Geelong play GWS in its first v fourth, would the Giants be kicking up a fuss that they have to play at GMHBA Stadium instead of playing at the MCG? They might prefer to play at the MCG. Having said that, the Giants are the only team to beat Geelong down at GMHBA Stadium this season.
Well, I think when you're the away team, you've got no leg to stand on. You play wherever you're told to play if you finish below the other team. You called it a business argument. I think it's actually just an integrity of the comp argument. And you say, blanket rule, until grand final day, home games are played at home teams' venues. And I don't care if that holds 10,000 people. But, actually, no, that I'll rephrase that. I don't care if it holds 25,000 people. So you have a minimum number, as long as it's a legitimate stadium. So if Geelong were redoing half their stadium, you wouldn't have it there.
No.
But they've spent money to actually make it a boutique stadium where they can hold enough people to really to have a terrific atmosphere. And as a result, they should be allowed to do it. If the Western Bulldogs got Witten Oval up to a certain standard where they could play Gold Coast there and GWS there in a home and away game, but it still only held 18,000, I'd say, look, that probably falls below that threshold.
Yeah.
But
you have to go case by case, and Geelong has a very strong case.
They've got a strong case.
Given the financial.
All right, let's move on. Max.
Hi.
Fair or fast, Carlton's win over Freo was the upset of 2019.
Fair, I think you have to say, given the context. I may have forgotten some upsets from early this year. I know there were some big ones, but the stakes of that game for Fremantle, needing to win it being one of probably their easiest games on the fixture and wanting to make finals and yet collapsing from 30 points down in the first quarter.
30 points up,
apologies. It's remarkable how Carlton won that game and speaks to the way that David Teague has changed their game style. They play a lot better game style, a lot more sustainable forward half game like North Melbourne.
Forward half game's crucial.
Yeah, and it's really impressive, particularly with, I mean, you'd say that Cripps, Mackay and Charlie Kerno are probably not their three best right now, but three of their most important players at the entire football club. And yet
Doherty's out as well.
Yeah.
I don't think we can underestimate the game that Ed Kerno played.
As captain.
So Nat Fyfe was smashing it in the first quarter, got off a chain, and Jack Silvani goes to Nat Fyfe and has a big influence, and well done to Jack Silvani. But as the captain, Kerno, who has been playing mainly as a forward and then before that as a tagger in previous years, then takes the mantle as the number one, as the guy in the Carlton midfield, has 20 contested possessions and 16 clearances as the stand-in captain, who only found out a couple of days ago that he was going to be the captain of the club. And he stands up like that. That is one of the more remarkable individual performances, I think, of the season.
Yeah. There's something to be said for sacking coaches mid-season. And I don't want to say...
saying Geelong should do it to win the flag.
No, I'm saying like the argument against sacking a coach has always been, well, why is it going to make things better? Well, here we are. North Melbourne and Carlton, I'm sure their fans are a lot happier now than they were 7 or 8 weeks ago. And it's not just it is an emotional spike, but it's more than that. It's a game style spike as well. Both teams are playing a completely different style, and we saw the stats last night on Fox Footy. And in future years, when coaches are under pressure and people think to themselves, oh, well, what difference is it going to make? It makes a difference.
There have been very real changes at Carlton, which, and I was a I was not a believer in sacking Bolts at the time. I'm as close to saying I was wrong about that as I could possibly be.
Just say you were wrong.
I don't know yet.
I think you were wrong.
He might have turned it around. Who knows?
Yeah.
Who knows? North Melbourne, though, has been good since round seven.
Yeah, that's understandable.
They changed their game style before Brad left. And that was obviously a different situation. He wasn't quite sacked anyway.
But Carlton look like they're just freed up. And I speak to people at the Blues, and it's a completely different place. Now, I don't know whether that's a massive tick for David Teague or a massive cross for Brennan Bolton. It's probably a mixture of the two. But certainly Bolton, without wanting to stamp on his grave, had an air about him that was micromanagement.
Yep.
And made it very difficult for people to perform freely and with conviction at their best, whereas David Teague's gone the other way.
There's similar reports and whispers around North Melbourne that some say nothing's changed, but others say that it is totally changed since Brad Scott left and Reece Shaw's taken over the caretaker reins. What have you heard from a North perspective?
No, that's right. I was about to say it's easy to come and be a caretaker. It's not easy. But it's a lot easier to be a caretaker than a full-time coach.
Oh, the bar's a lot
lower. You can sort of just have a crack and have a go, and people like you because you're a new voice, and if you win some games, it's a positive. And you're often taking over clubs that are struggling as well. But I think North looks to be a different club, and I think Carlton is absolutely a different club at the moment.
Would you hire Reece Shaw?
No, I'd like to see another month.
Okay.
Yeah. I think I like older coaches. I like older assistants that have been around a long time, and he's very young.
Bit ageist of you, Tom?
Bit ageist, yeah. I think he could be North Melbourne's coach next year, but I want to see more. Certainly the players and the people like him. Oh, let's whip through the rest of the Fair or Fast. Ben?
Yes.
John Longmire's AFL 360 performance should concern Sydney.
Yeah,
Fair or Fast.
Yeah, I think that's... Yeah, no, I think it's fair. So Robbo said at the end, and Robbo's been steadfast on the... He's not going to be leaving Sydney. But afterwards, both on air and off air, Robbo said to us last night, I've changed my tune. I think he's going to North Melbourne. And it was, he had the best opportunity ever to hose it down, Alistair Clarkson style, and he didn't. So I think it would concern Sydney.
Yeah. Why doesn't Longmire just say, I'll be at Sydney next year, and then if he moves from Sydney, he goes, things change, as they do?
Because I think there's only one answer. I think that he's seriously considering the North Melbourne offer, which is reportedly $6 million over 5 years. But I think he's seriously considering
it. If you speak to two people that know him well, and are well connected to the Swans, Paul Roos and Jared Healy, they are both adamant that he is not going anywhere. But I wonder whether they're placing too much of an emphasis on his contract. Contracts are not worth the paper they're written on when one of the two parties wants to break it.
And he has the ability to break it going into 2020, does he not?
I
believe that's what's been reported anyway.
Yeah, and that normally is the case going into last years of contracts.
Yeah, there you go. I wonder if this is all just one big negotiating tactic.
It could be.
Is he just trying to extract as much money?
It's an awkward one for the club if that's the case.
I know.
And the players.
The Swans are, no matter what the reality is, they look like they're in an awkward position.
Yeah. Max, fair or fast, the AFL should ban gambling advertising at games just as there is no tobacco advertising anymore.
It's a tougher one because... You have problem smokers, but any smoking is bad. You have problem gamblers, but not all gambling is bad.
That's a very well put statement.
So the thing for me is, as I am happy for adults to make decisions on these sorts of things, if they want to gamble, that's okay. But I would lean towards fair in the sense that you are imprinting this stuff on young minds. A lot of the campaigning around gambling now is about that love the game, not the odds, the way that kids are starting to grow up looking at odds. And I understand, analytically, I look at odds sometimes because they are a great way of telling what the general public thinks, what the wider community says, and wisdom of crowds and all that can really help you narrow down what's going to happen in something. But when people are looking at footy or sport in general in that lens, it can warp minds somewhat and make you more likely to do something and make you more likely to have a problem. So I can totally understand getting rid of it.
Well covered. We can spend a whole podcast talking about that. Now, I've got a fair or farce newbie now.
And bonus?
And a bonus question that I want you to answer at the same time, gentlemen, please.
Ooh, okay, yes.
So
we have one microphone, so this is impossible, but okay.
Put the microphone between you and answer at the same time. Looks like
a duet.
Yeah. Don't go breaking my heart.
couldn't if I tried, Tom.
Max... and Ben, fair or farce, the NBA trade period is the best player exchange window of any sport.
Three, two, one. Fair.
Farce.
yeah.
So, because why are you having it on the 4th of July weekend in the US? That's weird, isn't it?
It's a big weekend.
It's a weird situation. There are so many complicated things about it. The fact that teams are trading picks in 2026 is spectacular.
Yeah, that's funny. Kid to a 12 right now.
Yeah, you know, literally under 11s going into college are going to have their futures decided by this trade period. But also the fact that a lot of it isn't official. Like, Kevin Durant intends to sign with the Brooklyn Nets. He hasn't. There's so many weird specific things about the NBA trade period that bother me. It is the most fun one.
It's the fun. But $3 billion in one day.
But I feel like it would be better if we had a camera in a room where clubs walked in and like put a contract and then they shook hands and stuff. Yeah, also that's like, why the AFL trade period is so much better.
And also the trade lowdown.
Oh, yes. Well, yeah. Great program. So what is the best one then? If the NBA isn't the best?
English Premier League is pretty good. Right. The transfer goes for a month. Or it goes for a month twice a year. Mm. Or no, in the off-season, 2 months in July into August, September, and then again in January.
But hasn't that gotten worse? I feel like deadline day is less of a thing now, and that was a lot of the fun about it.
Well, deadline day in 2010 when I was living in London was pretty hot.
Exactly. Whereas I feel like nowadays less stuff happens
Naturally, any sport without a salary cap, the trade period is going to be bigger. Because clubs just come over the top and rush and doll other clubs, don't they?
Mm. Well, that was a big edition, once again, of Fair or Farce.
Fair. Was that dangerous by Sebastian Vettel? Farce. 5 second time penalty.
Now, let's quickly, before we look at the games and the cups for this weekend, dig into Max's mailbag once again on the Fox Footy podcast. And I'll just...
Oh, yes. Any more questions regarding tweeting or anything?
I, for some reason, ignored those.
Okay. Feel free to ask them.
Let's just do a quick few. Some interesting questions here from Anthony Mulroney. Why is Sam Walsh considered the lay-down rising star winner when you have a player like Ryan Myers playing a harder role with more effect on the game?
That's a good point.
Does he have more effect on the game?
I think he's playing a harder role. I'd probably agree with that. There's no harder role for a smaller player to come in than the small half forward role. And I think Cameron Rayner can attest to that. And Myers has had a huge influence. But he's also the benefit, I think, of how well the team is playing in general.
What about Walsh playing in the midfield against the best on-ballers in the game and not just holding his own but playing really good footy? Yeah. I think Walsh is the rising star by Flemington straight. And I think he's an absolute superstar. And we underrate him because of the way he moves and the way he looks and his name. He's not flashy. You think he's just sort of a player. He's a superstar, Sam Walsh.
Yeah, I think people are putting Sydney Sack as a close second to Sam Walsh. I don't think it's a Flemington straight chasm between one and two, but I think at the moment, if things keep going in the same trajectory, I cannot see in any way Sydney Sack usurps Sam Walsh season's end.
Good question.
Unless he kicks 4 goals a game sort of thing. That would be fun. Ben Pepe asks,
Pepe,
let's just say one of these teams makes it. Let's say the top seven on the ladder is somewhat locked, yep, or at least reasonably locked. Who makes the eight? Freo, Port, Essendon, Ruse, Swans, or Dogs?
Freo, Port, Essendon, Swans, Ruse, or Dogs?
I would have said Fremantle before the weekend.
No, I still think Fremantle.
Yeah.
I do. I still have faith in Fremantle. I reckon they're great to watch. Maybe I'm biased. Yeah.
Who's the best team in that bunch?
The best, well, obviously Freo, if I'm saying Freo.
No, but they might have advantages. They're a game ahead of some of those teams. They have a
percentage. I haven't even thought of that. I think Freo's the best team in that bunch.
It should be Port Adelaide. It should be Port Adelaide because everything, their premiership profile all stacks up. But the inconsistency, I think, is really starting to annoy fans and I think annoy pundits as well because the numbers add up, but it's not working on the ladder from a win-loss perspective.
I've got no issue that Port have changed the way they've played this year because they've actually spoken openly about it. Ken Hinckley said, we're just going to throw caution to the wind.
And they had to.
The way we trade, the way we draft, it's all going to change. But it's the previous years that make this year more frustrating for fans.
Matthew Radojevic, apologies for getting that wrong, I assume. Why is holding the ball a complete lottery these days? So many identical instances adjudicated differently depending on the umpire.
Well, you've got to tick three boxes. Mm. It's got to be a legal tackle. It's got to be incorrect disposal. And you've got to have prior opportunity. And if you don't tick all those three boxes, then it's not holding the ball. And it's very hard for umpires to adjudicate those three boxes for how many tackles there are per game. I think the umpires, I might be in the minority, I think the umpires do a good job with holding the ball.
Yeah, I agree with that too.
And too high and in the back. I think they do a good job with those. I think they missed a few sliding in below the knees on the weekend. Yeah. And I also think they're not great at marking contests. But I think of all the potentially grey rules, they do a good job with holding the ball.
I know Jared Healy's big on the push in the back. He mentioned that on the couch last night, having the inconsistencies around that. But I agree with you, Tom. Holding the ball is like a quick sort of, you've got like 2 seconds to interpret like a 3-step process. But I think it's a, I know it's in the heat of the moment. I think it's a pretty easy three-step process to follow in the heat of the moment, and I think they do it well.
Yeah. What fans get frustrated about is when players drop the ball when they're tackled straight away and it's play on. And I can sense that. But if the rule is if you make a genuine attempt, then it can't be holding the ball if you haven't had prior opportunity.
It's felt worse this year,
I feel.
I think. Just from my point of view as a fan, it's felt worse to me. I don't know if that's because they changed the interpretation slightly in the rules going into the year.
There should be team holding the ball. I've always said this. So if I handball to you, and I've had prior opportunity before I handball, and you get tackled straight away, then that should be holding the ball. And what that will do, it will create more freedom about it, and it will force you to knock it on.
Say, it'll ease, so you're thinking from an easing congestion perspective.
Yeah, it'll be a huge change, but I've I'm biased towards what Jared Healy thinks, and he's a big fan of this.
Yeah, set the Sharon free, as Jared
says. Set the Sharon free. Clarko thinks there should be no prior opportunity, which I don't like, because it would actually disadvantage people who gather the ball and can cleanly pick it up because they get tackled straight away and it's holding the ball. So we don't want a game where we knock it on. We don't want just a knock it on game. Mm. But I certainly think that we see it all the time. People handball to teammates and they are tackled immediately and they can't get rid of it and it's a ball up. That should be holding the ball because you've received it from a teammate who's chosen to give it to.
I don't mind that. Last one. David, very important question. Is Sydney Stack a top three player of all time or just top five?
You can ask that. You can answer that.
It feels a bit like that, doesn't it? I think he's just outside the top five, I think, at the moment, Sydney.
He's very likable.
He's getting there. You can understand the hype because he really has encapsulated the footy public. But he's great for the game. And well done for Richmond for taking a punt on him because it's paying off so far. We finish, as we always do on the Fox Footy podcast, with these tips and cups for Round 16, we start, Tom, with Hawthorn and Collingwood on Friday night. Huge game for both clubs. And this cup is sort of quintessential of what the whole cup process is all about. This is for the Bo Nixon Cup.
That is a great yeah, call from you.
Lovely.
Anyone called Bo, I like. Bo Dowler, I really rate. Collingwood, I'm going for. They'll bounce back. They're not losing two in a row. I know they've been playing some ordinary footy, but I really think it was sometimes you need a loss for a wake-up call.
Rebound effect sort of areas from this one for you?
Yeah, and also I've lost faith in Hawthorn. I know they had a crack against West Coast, but...
Do you like Little Bo Peep?
Yeah, not bad.
It's spelled differently, but similar.
Yeah.
I think Hawthorn is a lot better than people think. They were very close to winning that game.
But are they going
to
win this
on
game?
The weekend. I'm still going to tip Collingwood.
Okay.
But this is a very big upset alert game for me.
Our Craig Bird Cup is on the line on Saturday afternoon when Essendon hosts the Sydney Swans at the MCG.
Essendon.
Yeah, I think it's Essendon has improved enough.
They've got some momentum.
The MCG does make it. Oh, I want to tip Sydney, but I'm going to go with Essendon. Ah, that's a tough one again.
If the Swans win, it just gathers further momentum for them for their push for the top eight. Lots of current day players could put their hands on the cup between the Gold Coast Suns and Richmond this weekend. Tom Lynch, Dion Prestia, Anthony Miles, but it's the Andrew Raines Cup. That's up.
Oh, rightly so. Richmond. Banana peel game, but Richmond.
Jack's not going to play, so he can't kick 10. Is that right? Or is he going to come back?
Steve May's not playing for Gold Coast, and Rewalt kicked 10 on Steve May.
Oh, that's a very good... much better defenders now.
Absolutely impossible.
Okay, yeah. George Hall and Smith hopefully gets a game.
Your favourite cup, Tom, the Brad Symes Cup between Adelaide and Port Adelaide.
It is my favourite cup. I used to love Brad Symes. Concussion ruined his career, unfortunately. I'm going for... In these cups, I just tip who I think's better. And I think Adelaide...
Really? You tip the team that you think is better?
No, because sometimes you tip the team that you think's had a six-day break or it's got a home ground advantage or they've got less injuries or you rate their stars. I just think Adelaide, their best 22 at the moment is better than Port's best 22.
I don't know. Do you know whose showdown this is? If this is the Port one or the Crows one?
It's Adelaide's one.
It's Adelaide's one. So I think Adelaide probably... That might be the edge, honestly. That actually does help. Realistically, that's a crowd...
Are you joking?
That's a crowd noise
thing. 10,000 people.
There are not 10,000 people at the Adelaide Oval.
No, 10,000 difference.
No, but it's still a noise factor.
He's saying an internal noise of affirmation.
It's a real thing, although I will point out that Sir Swamp Thing, who you mentioned earlier, the Twitter statistician guru, did point out that historically, teams that lose the free kick count win more games of footy.
Is that right?
So maybe that's irrelevant. Maybe
if you disagree with Max Lawton, tweet him, at Max Lawton.
No, don't. I don't want any more tweets. Twitter's the only good thing on Twitter now is the bot that gets Wikipedia titles that match the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles theme. It's like Buenos Aires, Northern Railway, you know, things like
that. I've got no idea what he's talking about.
Random things that you can sing.
What's the next game?
It's important.
I don't know what you're talking about.
I love the Handy Point bot. That's always a good one on Twitter. Western Bulldogs and Geelong for the Nathan Jacura Cup.
You know, a handy behind at the end of a game, Tom.
I like the Bulldogs at Marvel. I really do. No Dangerfield for Geelong. Did I read that right? Has that been arrested?
No, he said he's pretty confident that he was going to play. But you know what Dangerfield's
well,
like.
Well, I don't know. The Bulldogs are the hardest team to tip. You just don't know.
Oh, completely.
5 minutes in, you can tip them, but yes. You've got no idea. But I need to make up a couple of tips in a tipping comp I'm in, so I'm going for the Dogs.
Aren't you on top still of the Fox Footy?
Another tipping comp.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
Much better class of tipper in that one, clearly. I feel like the Fox Footy tipping comp is actually bad. We're not good. I mean, I'm mid-pack and I'm doing terrible at Geelong, but still.
Fremantle and the West Coast Eagles, so the Western Derby. So always good to have the Derby and the Derby on the same weekend. This is for the Greg Harding Cup.
Of course it is.
Yeah, West Coast for me.
Freo picked a bad time to come into a Derby with no form.
Yeah.
Carlton and Melbourne, early Sunday game. You'll appreciate this one. This is for the Chris Johnson Cup. Remember
Brock McLean could have also been an option.
Yes.
Again, you're picking players that I've heard of. That's
Chris Johnson. I don't know who to tip in this game, Max.
It's a really tough one, isn't it?
Yeah.
There's a lot of tough ones.
I'm going Melbourne. Only because Carlton are coming back from Perth, and I reckon that's a tough gig.
And they would have got up for that game and you know, expectations all of a sudden.
I'm going Melbourne.
Melbourne wasn't too bad against Brisbane. Brisbane's just a very good side at the Gabba. They can win games in a quarter. I wonder how that will serve them in the finals.
North Melbourne and St Kilda in Tasmania for the Matthew Capuano Cup.
North Melbourne.
This might be the most confident I am about a game, saying North. Although St Kilda wasn't terrible against Richmond.
And the last one, the Giants and the Lions at Giants Stadium for the Joel Patful Cup.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you.
Giants! Could have been the Luke Power Cup as well.
Yes, he wasn't. It wasn't a bad
too
player.
Obvious. Yeah,
you're all good, Tom?
I'm all good, Ben.
Well answered today, mate.
No. Thanks for grilling me. That's fine. Not used to being the news. Not that it was a massive story, but when I got a message from the Daily Mail, I thought to myself, geez, there's bigger issues in the world than someone being called a leech on Twitter. This is the world we live in.
This is a very sounding board-esque podcast from us, Damo. Not going to do an impression, no?
Nope,
not anymore.
Thanks, Ben.
On the Fox Footy podcast, keep clicking back to foxfooty.com.au.